This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Major changes in federal overtime rules take effect today, and there are two things that just about everyone agrees on. Changes were long overdue, and the new rules are confusing. After that, it's a debate. For example, the Labor Department says that while 107,000 workers could lose eligibility for overtime pay, 1.3 million will gain it. The Economic Policy Institute, a liberal think tank, estimates that 6 million people will lose their overtime, while only a few gain it. This hour, we'll get differing opinions on overtime changes and how they'll affect you. Later in the program, the forces behind the spike in oil prices. But first, new overtime rules. If you have questions about the changes or if they're affecting you, give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from her office here in Washington, where she's just returned from a protest rally outside the Labor Department, is Linda Chavez-Thompson, Executive Vice President of the AFL-CIO. Thanks very much for being with us.
I'm very glad to be with you. Thank you.
The union is opposed to these rules. How come?
Very simply, it's stripping people of their overtime protection, and it's going to force them to work longer hours without fair compensation. The Bush administration says that they are wanting to improve and simplify and update the rules, but what they're doing is they're making it easier for employers to deny overtime provisions for many of its workers. We already have Sears, who in the Chicago paper today announced that 2,000 of their people will be disqualified from overtime. They're already taking action. How many people can we exclude? How much money can we save? And how many of these people, to keep their jobs, are going to have to work more than the 40 hours, and they're going to have to do it for free? It's not fair.
One of the provisions of the law, though, is workers earning $23,660 or below will now automatically receive overtime pay.
That is great. You know, that is great. That's a change that has needed to be done. But at the price of what? Denying it to 6 million people? That's the other side that they're not telling you. They're denying that it's going to hurt more than 107,000 people. Give me a break. You're taking the opportunity for people to work overtime, be able to get that extra money to send their kids to college, pay the extra cost of rent or house payments, etc. And what's happening here is that the new confusing rules, as you stated, because they are very confusing, will allow employers to reclassify employees, give them administrative titles, even if you're a working supervisor, and let's say that you're working but you are giving orders to two people under you, they can change your title and they can change your requirement to get paid for overtime. And you're going to see a lot of nurses that are going to lose their overtime pay if they have to work different extra shifts. Mm-hmm. You're going to see law enforcement personnel, firefighters. Many of these people will lose the protection of overtime because...
I thought firefighters were specifically exempted. They and police, emergency workers, as it will always get overtime pay.
Not necessarily, because what if you don't have a union contract that specifies your time and a half? That's going to happen to a lot of people in a lot of classifications.
Well, one thing that was everybody agreed about the old rules were they were incredibly vague. Will this at least make the rules clearer?
No, it will not. We think that there's too many things that are left unsaid and too many things that can be interpreted in different ways by employers. And we're hoping that when Congress gets back on September the 7th, that both the House and the Senate will set up their conference committee to try to resolve this matter. We haven't given up yet to make the changes now through the Congress, but very simply, if they do not, then we want a president who will make the changes, and that's why we're going to work very hard on making sure that Bush doesn't get back to the White House.
And we mentioned just a moment ago you'd just come inside from the rally outside the Labor Department.
Yes.
What was that like?
We had a lot of people turn out. We had about 500 to 600 people, maybe 1,000 people that showed up. You know, it's amazing how many people showed up because it affects the people that they represent. We have had three former Department of Labor officials from three different administrations, the Reagan administration, the first Bush administration, and the Clinton administration. We have three people who have issued a report that condemned the Bush administration's new overtime rule. They have concluded that with one exception, that one exception about adding those extra people for up to 23,000, they have said that every one of the administration's changes to the overtime rules will weaken the eligibility requirements, and it'll increase the number of workers who will lose their overtime rights. That's three different people, career people, who worked in the Department of Labor under three different administrations. And we have many other studies that have been done. We're going to have to wait and see if these changes really stay in effect. But people in this country who are used to overtime to be able to pay their bills are going to find that that money is missing. It's going to be in the pocket of the employers, and it's not going to be in the pocket or the pocketbooks of the workers of this country.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Linda Chavez-Thompson is Executive Vice President of the AFL-CIO, and she joined us from her office here in Washington, D.C. And joining us now is somebody who works at the Labor Department now. Alfred Robinson is Director of the Labor Department's Wage and Hour Division. Good of you to be with us.
Thank you, Neil. Nice to be with you as well.
You just heard the criticisms from the AFL-CIO. Does the Labor Department, as we mentioned earlier, they seem to have pretty good, solid estimates on how many people are going to be affected. They differ wildly from what we just heard.
Yes, we do, Neil. Our estimate is that 6.7 million working Americans will see their overtime rights strengthened and updated. As you mentioned in the very beginning, we estimate that 107,000 could possibly lose overtime, but I would point out that those 107,000 are compensated at $100,000 or more. So we've done spent a lot of time, gone through many comments that we received last year, over 78,000 comments, to bring to forward an updated rule that does clarify the requirements for classifying employees as exempt executive, administrative, or professional employees.
And everybody agrees, as I mentioned, that the previous classifications were a nightmare, involving a lot of lawsuits over who was entitled and who wasn't and all of that. Do you think that will change now?
We do. And you're right. It was almost universally agreed that that changes, reforms, were overdue. And by raising the salary level, the largest increase in the history of these regulations, from $155 per week to $455 per week, we have increased the protection for low-wage workers. And you're right, this has been the focus of a lot of litigation over time. There's a lot of uncertainty on the part of businesses, how to classify people. So we've tried to come forward with clearer, defined concepts in these regulations, which, by the way, built on some of the old regulations and using court decisions, case laws, which we've explained in our preamble, we have now brought clarity and protecting, restoring, if you will, the overtime protections. If I might could point out one thing that was mentioned, the Sears press comment about 2,000 people losing overtime,
mm-hmm.
They need to check the Sears website, I guess. They have updated that because the Chicago paper that reported that reported it erroneously. They've had 2,000 they've classified who will be receiving overtime, not who will be losing overtime. So that was a correction that Sears had issued, I think it was actually Friday. So people are using this as an opportunity to evaluate and see how they are in compliance with the law. By bringing clarity, we did not change the law as, for example, to registered nurses. Ever since 1971, registered nurses could be classified as exempt professional employees. However, the market dictates, nurses primarily are paid on an hourly basis. And anyone paid on an hourly basis, even registered nurses, are automatically guaranteed overtime. This rule does not apply to manual employees, people who work, perform manual labor, or blue-collar workers. Remember, this is white-collar exemptions. It's a narrow exemption for executive, administrative, and professional employees from overtime and minimum wage requirement. So it's not a broad...
Could you see how an employer looking to save some money might find some loopholes in this and reclassify some employees as supervisory personnel and thus get them out of their overtime?
Well, if they do that and it's improper, that's why the Wage and Hour Division is here. We take complaints, we investigate, and when we find people have violated the law, we recover back wages for employees. Last year, we had the greatest recovery in the history of Wage and Hour Division, over $212 million recovered across America. So that's what we're here for, is when people don't comply with the law, we're here to help enforce it. But also, this is an opportunity for people to have rules they can read and understand and apply. And employees can read and know their entitlement to overtime pay. And by reducing the uncertainty, you minimize the instances in which you'll have mistakes, misclassifications, and lawsuits.
Alfred Robinson, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Alfred Robinson, Director of the Labor Department's Wage and Hour Division, spoke to us from his office here in Washington. Well, let's try to sort out some of the confusion surrounding these new rules. Lee Strope is with us here in Studio 3A, the national labor writer for the Associated Press. And here's a question every reporter absolutely hates. Who's right?
Well, good question. No one seems to know. Labor lawyers, experts, the Labor Department, labor unions, they all say that, one says the sky is falling, the other says, the sky is blue. It's very hard to tell. No one really knows at this point.
Can we begin with everybody accepting the idea that the old rules were needed to be changed?
I think most people agree on that. I think people on all sides of the political argument pretty much agree that the old rules were very confusing. The new rules also are pretty confusing, but they did clarify some things.
For example?
For example, anyone who earns $23,660 a year now receives overtime. Anyone who earns below that amount. People who earn $100,000 a year and currently are eligible for overtime will lose that overtime.
Okay. Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK. Email is totn@npr.org. And Joe's with us from New Haven, Connecticut.
Hi, quick question. Could you define what overtime is or what overtime protection is? For instance, if I'm an engineer and I'm making, $50,000 a year and I am working 40 hours a week, does working 45 mean I don't get any additional pay at all? Or does it mean I just don't get time and a half?
It actually means time and a half. Overtime is considered, 1.5 times your hourly wage that you receive.
Yeah.
So now if you work 45 hours a week and you are eligible for overtime, then you should get paid for 5 hours, an hour and a half. Time and a half, 4 or 5 hours.
And what were the rules before in that category, that job category? I'm a white-collar person. I supervise 3 people.
It's questionable. Engineers are one of the positions that the Labor Department is targeting, wanting to make some clarifications there. Engineers have been the subject of many lawsuits, trying to figure out what their status is. So are you currently eligible for overtime as it is now?
Well, it's been it's never exactly clear in where I work. It's always been a little bit vague whether we were a salaried employee. I think since we were salaried or considered to be salaried, we were only getting straight time and for working overtime. And
so when you work the 45 hours, you still got the same old hourly rate?
Yeah, or you got comp time or you got something else. I can't actually haven't worked overtime in a long time, but I'm just...
Joe, we'll try to explore this question more in depth when we come back from a break. Thanks very much for the phone call. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. I'm Neil Conan. Back after a break, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the new federal law on overtime pay that goes into effect today. How will it impact you? And if you don't know, how will you find out? Our number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And our guest is Lee Stroop, national labor writer for the Associated Press. And let's go back in the earlier segment. Alfred Robinson of the U.S. Labor Department said, look, this only covers white-collar as opposed to blue-collar workers, doesn't cover workers, people who work with their hands, that sorts of things. Is that a clear definition as to who's white-collar and who's blue-collar?
That's fairly correct. People who, you know, labor, use their hands, mostly blue-collar workers, should not be affected by this rule. Sometimes there are some gray areas, though. The Labor Department is saying that, for instance, police officers will not be affected. But there are some police officers, let's say, for instance, lieutenants, who supervise many employees. They do a lot of paperwork. They may not be out on the streets, all day. So there's a possibility they might not be eligible for overtime. The fact is, no one really knows at this point.
And this is all going to have to be settled, what, by case law, as each individual, lawsuit proceeds to its conclusion?
Critics of this plan argue that these changes are just creating a whole new set of confusion, that it's going to be a lot of litigation. And while it may have clarified some areas, it's just muddying, other areas, and there will be a lot of lawsuits.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another caller on the line. Angela's with us from Kansas City.
Yes.
Hi.
Hello. I've heard that you don't get overtime if you make over $100,000, and you do if you make less than $23,000. So what if you're in between? What if you're in the middle?
That's the area that we're talking about, Angela. It depends on what you do for a living. What is that?
Computer-aided drafting.
And are you? Do you work for a big company?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a union shop?
Yes.
So you're a union member?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How does that apply to her, Lee?
Union members who are covered under collective bargaining agreements aren't affected. But labor union officials argue that when the contract expires, then companies may use these changes as a way to, try to get that into the next contract. So while they may not be affected, it could affect their collective bargaining agreement the next time that's negotiated.
When does your contract come up again, Angela?
Not for another 4 years, so I guess I'm okay for now.
I guess you're okay for now.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks very much for the phone call.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an email question from Sharon. I heard that state rules may override federal rules. Whichever rules are best for the employee are the rules that are in effect. Is that the case, where state rules and federal rules conflict? Whose rules hold sway?
That is correct. Actually, there are 18 states that have separate overtime rules that are different from the federal rules. Whichever benefits the worker the best, whichever gives them the most protection, that is the provision that is in effect. So while maybe some of these changes, maybe they've lessened some protections, the state law, if it is more protective in certain areas, then companies will be required to follow state rules.
Here's another email question from Cindy in Northfield, Ohio. Does this new overtime pay apply to part-time workers? For example, if a person is scheduled to work 8 hours on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, what happens if they work over 8 hours on any of those days?
It is actually 40 hours a week, or a pay period. For instance, if you're paid on a twice weekly basis, some companies do 80 hours, but it's basically 40 hours a week or more, then you can be paid overtime.
So if you're scheduled to work 24 hours a week and you end up working 30, you would still get straight time for those additional hours.
Exactly.
All right. Let's get another caller. Joseph is with us from Minneapolis.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Joseph.
Well, thank you. I would just like to point out that I think everybody should get overtime. I think this white-collar, blue-collar business is just so much fluff for corporations to avoid paying people.
And I'm sure Donald Trump agrees with you.
Well, we already work, and I heard this on public radio last, we already work more in this country than any other industrialized country. So, I think that if employers are forced to pay time and a half to virtually everybody, then that incents them to hire more people, so they shouldn't be working people with any regularity overtime without paying them.
Well, I guess
that's
this...
That's all I was going to say.
Okay, Joseph, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Lee, I guess this goes back to the idea of what the 1938 Fair Labor Standards Act and why that law came into being in the first place.
Exactly. It basically protects the 40-hour work week for workers. There are about 150 million covered by the Fair Labor Standards Act. And it basically prevents employers from working people more than 40 hours a week. And if they do, they have to pay premium pay. So it helps hold down those hours for workers.
And going back to that law back in 1938, still in the midst of the Depression, I guess, but they decided some people were eligible for this, others weren't.
Correct. And it's mostly blue-collar workers, laborers, who are eligible generally, and generally white-collar workers are not.
Because they were conceived to be supervisors, managers, people who
learned professionals with, you know, a great deal of expertise and, you know, college educations and things like that.
That includes journalists, doesn't it?
It does.
Aren't you glad the government considers you a learned employee?
It does now, actually. One of the provisions in this new agreement actually specifically exempts journalists, because there was some disagreement, some confusion on whether journalists were covered or not.
Let's get another caller, presumably in a larger employment group on the line. Robert's with us from Jacksonville.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
Good. I was curious, is there any provision in the bill that's going to keep employers from, you know, scheduling or forcing the non-overtime paid workers to work the overtime hours while keeping the employees that are eligible from overtime from working over 40 hours?
Is that a loophole that some companies may drive through?
I would say that that's pretty much the way things are now, that, you know, workers who do not receive overtime, you know, they're asked to work overtime. And those who, you know, are required to get the premium pay for more than 40 hours a week, employers may not want to pay them, so they don't ask them to work overtime. Nothing really should change in that area.
So, in other words, if you thought it was bad before, Robert, it's still bad.
Well, luckily I'm self-employed, so it doesn't really affect me, at least not right now.
You're specifically exempt, I think, Robert. You're self-employed.
Yeah, at the moment, anyway.
And
Thanks a lot. You have a good day.
Well, I was just going to say before he left, but I think most self-employed people end up working more than 40 hours a week in any case. Here's an email question from Heidi. Can you speak to the legality of comp time, and is there any implication for this type of compensation in the new law? In other words, a lot of places will offer you, if you work overtime, they will give you comp time as opposed to additional pay.
That's a question that really creates a lot of confusion. If you are required to receive overtime for working more than 40 hours a week, you can substitute comp time, but only if it's in the same pay period. For instance, you work, you know, 43 hours this week. Maybe you can leave 5 hours early the next week. It has to be in that pay period. So, you know, for people who want to rack up comp time, maybe take a vacation down the road, that actually is illegal. Companies have to pay you overtime, or you can request comp time, but again, only in that pay period.
Let's get a caller on the line. Jane from Berkeley.
Yes, I'm wondering about the overtime pay for health professionals. I'm a registered dietitian, and I am eligible for comp time, but not for overtime pay. And I'm wondering, I didn't hear the first of the program, so I'm not sure whether this will be included in that.
Nurses we heard about, not dietitians.
Actually, I'm not really sure about this area. You know, if dietitians, if they have, you know, a certain amount of, you know, studies, certain degrees they have to have, certain, you know, qualifications, they probably are exempt from overtime anyway. Registered nurses was the one that was specifically stated in the new rules.
That will be exempt from overtime pay?
Well, under some conditions.
Yes, generally, yes.
Because our trainings are very similar, you know, in terms of hours needed and extent of training and so forth.
And as I recall, the rule for nurses was if you are you're paid hourly, then you are eligible for overtime. If you are salaried, you are not.
I see. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Jane, good luck.
Thanks. Bye.
Appreciate it. Let's talk now with Rose, and Rose is on the line with us from Philadelphia.
Hi. I just wanted to put the point of view in there from, I'm a longtime HR professional.
Human resources, yeah.
Yes, and who is trying to help people understand these changes and the benefit to the employer. And I think what's important, I don't know, I'm hearing a lot of calls and people believing it has everything to do with them as a person as opposed to the job that they hold within an organization. And to help people understand that it is the job that is exempt or non-exempt, not the individual. And I guess I was a little concerned, particularly when the first man who called in who said he was an engineer, you know, 9 times out of 10, that job is going to be exempt at a $50,000 an hour rate. And it's expected when somebody is paid that kind of salary that they should not be concerned about how many hours they're working, but about quality of work that they are participating in, contributing to the organization. So we as employers and we as HR professionals have been waiting for this change for many, many years and are very happy to see these changes, although there's still many more that need to come down the pike.
How will it – it sounds like it's going to make your job easier.
It will make our job easier, particularly from the standpoint of administering the FLSA laws within an organization.
The Fair Labor Standard Act.
Yes.
You could understand, though, if somebody found that they had been eligible for overtime and now no longer were, that they might take it personally.
Yes, can understand that, but I would hope they would also understand that their contribution to the organization is much more valued from the standpoint of an earnings potential and what it can bring to the organization.
Mm-hmm. What kind of company do you work for? How often does this come up?
I actually work for an employers association that provides this kind of support to member companies. So we're representing a good 800 member companies here in the Mid-Atlantic region. And it came up as soon as, again, this morning with an employer calling saying, Rose, heard they changed the overtime rules. What's it all about?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is something we deal with daily.
And it sounds like you're going to be busy the next couple of weeks anyway.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Rose, good luck.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. That's obviously one group of people we hadn't thought about, but obviously human resource employees, their lives have changed dramatically, at least in the short term. Let's get another caller on the line, and John is with us from Fort Walton Beach in Florida.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
Well, my question is, I'm a teacher in Fort Walton Beach, Florida, and do teachers constitute white-collar or blue-collar, and how are they affected by the new law, since we're salaried teachers are paid between the $23,000, whatever it is, and the $100,000.
Teachers shouldn't be affected. I believe most teachers already are exempt from overtime. They are not eligible to receive overtime. And there's really, really no change in that area. There was something added for preschool and daycare operators, teachers. You know, for instance, if you work at a daycare and maybe you're working with infants and you're not actually teaching children, then you might be eligible for overtime.
And aren't many, if not most, teachers covered by union contracts?
For the most part, I'm currently not with the union. I have to be here for a little while. This is my first year.
Okay, John. Thanks very much for calling in. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
We're talking about the new overtime rules, which took effect today. Our guest is Lee Strope, the national labor writer for the Associated Press. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And a couple of sort of process questions, this does happen to be an election year. This has already been, obviously, it's promulgated by President Bush's Labor Department. He's in favor of it. It's been attacked by the Kerry campaign. How is this likely to play out this election year?
It's interesting. When the Labor Department first issued the rules last year in 2003, there was a huge uproar. Labor unions were screaming. Democrats on the Hill were very upset. There were a lot of hearings, a lot of attempts to kill the regs. The Labor Department got very smart politically about the rules. They went back and, you know, as they were issuing their final rules, they made a lot of changes that were really lightning rods that quieted some of the critics. They also added a title called it's now called the Fair Pay Plan. And so they got, I guess, very smart politically, and they're really trying to you know, show people that it's going to help a segment of the population.
The Fair Pay Plan.
Yes.
Hard to say, but it looks good on paper.
Right.
Name things. But in terms of adding the sweeteners to the deal, including everybody who makes less than $23,600 a year, that presumably would please some critics.
Right. And they are, you know, they're really focusing on that segment of the population, saying these people, you know, don't get overtime now, but they will get overtime after the new rules go into effect, and so it's a very good thing for these people. I will add, though, that employers who maybe are hit with some of these rising costs, they do have an option to raise a person's salary over that threshold, the 23,660, to then, again, exempt them from overtime. So not, you know, there will be people who will be newly eligible for overtime. People may get raises and above that threshold and, you know, remain not eligible for overtime.
Okay. Todd is on the line with us from Oklahoma City.
Hi, how are you doing?
Okay.
I have a question. I run a small, private, non-for-profit organization. It's a children's home. And obviously, we're open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We do have staff that they accrue comp time, but they don't accrue comp time based on working more than their 40-hour work week. They accrue comp time for working holidays, for example. And I kind of wonder how the holiday thing goes into that, if they work Christmas or Thanksgiving.
Anything in the rules about that or anything specific on nonprofits?
Actually, no. Holidays are not addressed in the new rules, and also nonprofits are not either. So I would assume, or that I'm aware of anyway, I would assume that...
It depends on how much your workers make and what jobs they do.
Right.
So, okay.
Correct. Okay.
Thanks,
Thank
Todd. Earlier we heard Linda Chavez-Thompson of the AFL-CIO say that they were going to be pursuing changes through Congress. I think it's Senator Harkin who's been pushing a bill through Congress to revise the regulations yet again. Any idea of the prospects of that legislation?
It doesn't look good. I know that they are planning to make another attempt in a couple of weeks when Congress returns. But again, the session is so short. There's an election. It's going to be very hard to block any kind of changes. It doesn't look good. I think their best shot, from what they are saying, is that they hope to elect John Kerry. John Kerry has promised to roll back these regulations if he is elected.
Is that something in the purview of the president, or does he need legislation to do that?
My understanding is he could issue an executive order. They could promulgate new regulations and, change things back the way they were. I think there are a few options there.
Okay. In the 30 seconds we have left, email from Donna Bull. I'm the accounting manager in a very small company, also wear the hat of HR manager. The office manager is salaried at a biweekly rate of $880. In reading the Department of Labor regulations, do I now have to pay her $910 to avoid paying overtime for time over 40 hours?
Actually, I'm not sure about that. I think it
And these are all very specific questions.
Yeah.
Maybe you better check with your own office. And I know it's a small company, but I bet you've got a lawyer. So thank you for the email, Donna, and we hope you can figure it out. Lee Strope, thank you for joining us today and helping us at least get a peek through the murk of these new regulations.
Thank you.
Lee Strope is the national labor writer for the Associated Press. When we come back from a short break, we'll be talking about the ups and downs of oil prices. If you'd like to join that conversation, it's the same phone number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email TOTN at NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.